strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. All eyes on the southern border of the United States. Brandon Judd was on Arizona's Morning News talking about we've had a record for apprehensions in the month of April, and it is up a huge number from last year. And what is happening with illegal immigration here in America? And a lot of Americans are really starting to pay attention to this, not just in border states like Arizona. Joining me now is Roy Herrera. He's a Democratic strategist. Roy, let's start with the fact that both senators from Arizona are Democrats, and both of them are very outspoken about the failings of this administration. Where do you stand? Do you stand on the side of the senators, or are you siding with the White House here?
Well, I think I kind of stand on the side of both of them. I think that the senators, obviously, they're senators of a border state. They have an up close and personal view of what's going on here, and they have been telling the White House this is what's going on and this is what needs to be fixed. And the White House, I think, should listen to that because it is the senators that represent the border. But at the same time, I mean, there's sort of two issues here. There's the short term, the shorter term issue, which is what you just mentioned, that there's the increase of migrants being apprehended at the border. And there's been a significant increase since last year. There's also the longer term question about whether we can get comprehensive immigration reform through Congress. I think in the State of the Union that the president gave, he focused more on the latter. And I think the Arizona senators wanted him to focus more on the former.
Well, I think that both need to be handled. But when you look at what's happening at the border, it's obviously a crisis. When those children were found, the story came out yesterday of those little children. They're found, one of them with no clothes on whatsoever. And we're seeing facilities that are being over capacity, people being released into towns. And here's the issue I have with this is I am a huge proponent of immigration in America. I think immigrants are the lifeblood of this country. I love the new blood that comes in and the new ideas and the passion for the American dream. But when it gets clouded between illegal and legal immigration, I think it does a disservice to the people that do it the right way.
Well, and I understand that. And I think that I totally agree with you that the part of what is good about America is that we are a place that is welcoming and have historically been welcoming to immigrants. And that's part of what makes America great. I think we clearly, and we've discussed this before, have a broken immigration system in this country where we're simply just not handling immigration in the right way across the board. I mean, we're talking not just about migrants. We're talking about asylum processes. We're talking about, all the folks that are undocumented that are already here and have been here, and the dreamers, et cetera. So all across the board, there needs to be a fix. There just hasn't been one. Now, there's been a humanitarian crisis at the border for a while now, since the Trump administration to now, particularly when it comes to unaccompanied children being apprehended at the border. We saw that occur under Trump. It was, I think, devastating images from then, and we still have a problem now. There have been some encouraging signs, at least this week, that the number of unaccompanied minors that have been detained by Border Patrol has actually decreased compared to last month. Not to say the overall numbers have decreased, but just that particular number. So there are some signs, but clearly at the end of the day, there needs to be more resources down there to fix this problem. And then longer term solutions like dealing with what's going on in the home countries that children and adults are coming from in Central America.
Well, and to be fair, just to clarify, I was down on the border in McAllen, Texas during the Obama administration when these unaccompanied minors were coming. So this goes back further than the Trump administration. Yeah. This is a problem that's gone for decades that we haven't fixed.
That's correct. I mean, I used to be, we haven't really gotten into this show before, but I used to be a federal prosecutor myself. And I was a border crimes prosecutor, primarily gun and drug trafficking cases, but also immigration cases. And so I've seen this, and that was during the Obama administration. So I've seen this issue happen for literally over a decade, if not longer. There needs to be some solution to this. The real problem, though, and this gets back into what I think the White House has been attempting to do, is that in these Central American countries where people are leaving because of the violence and the lack of economic opportunity, they're led by pretty much corrupt governments. And so the situation is, how do we make the environment in those home countries better to take away the incentive of coming here? And that's just a really difficult very difficult problem that the White House is dealing with right now.
Well, then let me ask this question. You had said earlier that the senators are talking to the White House. How important is it that the president and or the vice president visit the border? Because I'll be honest with you, it seems like a glaring mistake that they are not coming down and looking at the border and talking to the senators here. And I know they can be informed, but there is something about the optics of coming down and looking for yourself and saying we're taking this seriously.
I mean, I'm, you know, personally all for the president or the vice president coming down to the border of Arizona and seeing for themselves what is occurring there. That, I think, is not a bad thing. And there's certain value in doing that. I guess what I would say, though, is that we have seen now elected officials, particularly Republican senators and some of our statewide office holders here, go down to the border to, you know, quote unquote, see what's going on. When really that ends up turning into political theater more than anything else, and they're just there for the photo op. And I'm thinking specifically about, you know, images of, you know, Senator Cruz on a gunboat in a flak jacket on the Rio Grande, right? I mean, I'm not sure how helpful those kinds of visits are. So to the extent that a visit from the president or the vice president can be constructive, I think it's a good idea, and that it's actually focused on, you know, addressing the real problems that are here and informing those solutions. Then I think it's a good idea for them to come here.
So let's talk about solutions for a moment. The Republicans have talked for a long time about the need for border security. The Democrats are talking about immigration reform, and both sides agree that both things need to be done. Is there a chance that this Congress can work together with this crisis and finally get both done for the American people?
You know, I hope so. I mean, I sincerely hope so. And I think, you know, most people do, because I think most people understand how complex this issue is, but that there needs to be some sort of comprehensive solution to this. So I hope so. The problem, I think, is that we already have, for example, you know, Senator McConnell, the minority leader of the Senate, being very clear that, you know, his number one priority is essentially to block every legislative priority of President Biden. It was a similar position he took at the beginning of the Obama administration. And I'm not here to say that Democrats don't do the same thing, but the problem is if there's not two parties that are willing to negotiate in good faith with each other to try to get something done, because the only way in this particular area that something's going to get done is in a bipartisan manner, then I'm not sure it could ever really happen. And so I'm hopeful that at least on this issue, if anything else, there can be some real discussions and some real compromises so that there can be some improvement because we've been waiting for it for decades.
Well, you've got Senator Sinema that's now been named the chair of the subcommittee and when it comes to border issues. And you've got two Democrats from Arizona that are siding with the border security need to stop what's happening at the border. Now, that seems like an inroad for the Biden administration and with Senator McConnell, where maybe both sides can get together. My last question for you is I've talked at length about the need for a guest worker program. Could that be one of the areas that both sides could agree on, that if we had a thriving guest worker program for jobs that Americans aren't taking, it could help our construction industry, it could help our service industry, it could go a long way, and it also could take some of the pressure off the border, because if people have a legal visa to be here to work, they're not sneaking across the border, and it takes that pressure off the law enforcement there. Do you think that's something that both sides could look at and say, here's a point of agreement, and we can expand from there on the issue?
I hope so. I mean, I've been thinking for a while now that the two areas that there may be some bipartisan compromise is on this migrant worker issue and on the Dreamers. Those are the two sort of areas where there can be at least partial solutions to what we're dealing with here, where that can actually get passed. The question that I suppose I still have, though, is that would either of those things be able to be passed cleanly? In other words, just on as a standalone measure on their own, without attaching other things to it, like, you know, let's say sort of draconian border security or something like that, which will be not workable for the Democratic side. You know, so I'm not sure. I'm hopeful, but if there are two areas, particularly in migrant workers, as you spell out, where we could and should agree on without any sort of additional complications, it should be these areas.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I always appreciate the conversation and the different perspective, especially with your experience in prosecuting those cases, and I hope we'll do it again.
Sounds good. Thank you for the invite.
All right. Thanks, Roy. That's Roy Herrera, Democratic strategist, and a different point of view. Again, if two sides can agree on something and expand from there, maybe we can get an answer and stop what's happening at the border now, stop creating the next generation of dreamers. But he's right in the sense that we've got to solve the problem, the current problem we have with the people and the Dream Act. Are people losing faith in the CDC? We'll talk about the latest where they've dropped the ball. That coming up in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate you spending some time with the show today. Let's talk about the CDC. Reports are that they grossly exaggerated outdoor transmission rates. The CDC is greatly exaggerating these COVID-19 numbers. The higher federal figure seems to be a huge exaggeration, according to a top infectious disease doctor at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. So Dr. Andrew Richerman of University of Pennsylvania added, I'm sure it's possible for transmission to occur outdoors in the right circumstances, but if we had to put a number on it, I would say it's much less than 1%. The CDC has been using the number about 10%, and that's still a low number, but not when you're talking about less than 1%. Now, the implications here about inconvenience, and let's be honest, the first thing you think about when this happens is the inconvenience to the individual. There's no doubt about it. But when you start talking about the inconvenience to business, I talked about a friend of mine a Facebook friend, but someone I correspond with fairly often, who runs a tour business here in the Valley that I think is such a great idea. You know those pink Jeep tours up in Sedona, but it's a bicycle tour. It's mountain bike tours here in the Valley, around the cool trails and around here in Arizona. It is such a cool idea for a business. And you start the business up, you got to buy the equipment, you got to advertise, you got to get word of mouth out there. You work your butt off to get a clientele. And then COVID-19 hits, and there are a lot of restrictions. And I'll guarantee you it's going to be difficult to get on a mountain bike and ride around with a mask on your face. And had we been told earlier that the rate of transmission was less than 1%, I guarantee you people would be a lot more likely to do things outdoors. How about tubing the Salt River? What a tradition that is here in Arizona, where people are able to tube the salt. That was halted again. There are so many things. Spring training, all of the spring training games are outdoors. All of them. There are no indoor stadiums for spring training in Arizona. Imagine that industry being able to flourish because there's less than 1% chance of outdoor transmission. Think of the industries that have been hammered because of what people perceived were the data from the CDC being accurate. So I want you to hear Dr. Sanjay Gupta, because Senator Susan Collins of Maine said that she doesn't trust the CDC anymore. But when you listen to what Senator Gupta said, he agrees with the senator.
It pains me to say this, but I see where she's coming from, Senator Collins, on this. I mean, I think for a long time, the concern was the CDC was providing guidance, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic that was not scientifically based. And as a result, we didn't do things that we should have done in this country that could have greatly mitigated what has happened here. And now I think it's almost a little bit of the reverse problem. The science is not necessarily being followed to the same extent. And as a result, we're probably doing things that we don't need to be doing.
So when you hear that, Dr. Gupta is not siding with the Trump administration. This isn't a right-wing guy at all. As a matter of fact, he takes the CDC under the Trump administration to task for not doing enough. The misinformation from them at the beginning caused us to not do things we should have. And now we're doing things we shouldn't do. Why would anyone, I mean this sincerely, why would anyone believe anything they say anymore? You want to talk about the revolt? People want to be back to normal. There are people that are not wearing masks now. There are people that are saying, I'm never going to wear them. This is a joke. This whole thing is a joke. Well, you don't think that fire has been fueled 10 times? And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. To all of my friends out there that have been adamant in mask, what would you call them? Non-mask wearers. You're right. You are 100% right about the nonsense we're seeing now from the CDC. And so they have no credibility at this point when it comes to this. And in the end, the American people are smart and they want to do what's right. We're not just a bunch of selfish people that don't care. And we fight like children a lot of times, but people care. I complied with protocol because I wanted to comply. I wanted to be a member of the community. I wanted the people around me to feel safe. I wanted the people around me to see that I will make others feel comfortable. But when you listen to the people that weren't wearing masks, the ones that absolutely refused, think about the things that we should be doing right now that we should have been doing for weeks and months had the CDC gotten their act together and either gotten the data out there correctly or told the truth. Which is it? Either they had a huge miscalculation with the decimal point from 10% to less than 1%, or they lied. Either way, their job is accurate information. Yes, it's an inconvenience. Yes, there are people out there that say, see, I told you. But in the grand scheme of things, imagine the industries that have been so damaged because of restrictions that were unnecessary. This is going to be, I think this is a bigger story than many others out there because of the damage that it is doing to business, to any business that operates outdoors, to any business that can operate outdoors. Outdoor concerts, all the things we could have been doing. So you don't want people inside. You don't want it being spread inside. Do it outdoors. Well, now we're over 100 degrees. It's more difficult. But there was a way this could have been done the right way. And they just missed the boat. They completely missed it. Going to talk inflation and the economy. How are these things going to affect you? All this coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the Mike Broomhead Show. And let's talk about the economy and what's happening. Did Biden cause the inflation? Well, no. Yes and no. I mean, you can't blame everything on one person. Policies of an administration matter. I mean, that's why the presidency shouldn't be a popularity contest. Neither should the Congress. Yes, there are going to be real issues when it comes to the election cycle coming up that people are going to look at. And here in the state of Arizona, let's start here in Arizona and what the difference is. Here in the state of Arizona, we have rode out a COVID-19 better than most states. The balanced budget, the way they were able to right the ship, when the economy crashed 08-09 nationally, it affected Arizona in a huge way. Arizona was one of the worst in the country per capita in debt. We were selling buildings and leasing them back for cash. We were doing all kinds of things to try to right the ship. This was under a different governor. This was under Governor Brewer. But the legislature and the governor's office was able to navigate then, and cities had to do horrible things that they didn't want to do, but we did them. We started to climb out of that, and then the Ducey administration took over. And it isn't just the governor's office. The legislature gets a lot of credit for this as well. When there is a plan that comes from the executive branch, and it's also fostered in the legislature, that is business friendly. Now, there's a difference between business friendly and giving away the farm. No one gives away the farm. There's still regulation. There's still a lot of things that happen. But we created an atmosphere, and then we had a governor that went out and sought industry. Construction was such a big part of Arizona's economy for a long time. And, you know, the jobs we had here were not necessarily middle class jobs. It has grown into that. The construction industry now is a great living for someone that's good at it. But you watch what we've done with our economy in Arizona and how now there were, pre-COVID, there were more manufacturing jobs in Arizona than there were construction jobs. That is a major, major accomplishment for a state that saw such a shortage of middle-class jobs. There was a huge disparity between the wealthy and the poor. And now we are seeing that gap close because we are importing jobs that are middle-class, high-paying, good-paying, great-benefit careers as opposed to just jobs. What we've also done is kept the tax rate for people low in Arizona. I hope we go to a zero income tax and go like they do with other states with a zero state income tax where we're doing things, whether it's sales taxes or bed taxes or things we do with tourism that pay the freight here in Arizona. That being said, when you look nationally where it happens, a lot of the policies that are set for states everywhere, you start to see a rise in costs that have nothing to do with taxes. Inflation comes from a lot of places. One of the stories I have in front of me has to do with the grocery industry. The grocery industry is saying that they are seeing a shortage of manpower industry-wide. That would be from farm to table in a lot of the things that are distributed through a grocery store. because of that labor shortage. Well, a lot of that labor shortage had to do originally with COVID-19, but you have over 8 million jobs available. At what point does the American government say to the American people, we are no longer going to support you with unemployment? This is running out. You better go get a job. Arizona started that process. Other states are doing it where you have to show you're looking for work in order to get unemployment. The federal government needs to do a better job of getting people back to work. Here's where I think the policies are flawed when it comes to the oil industry. The ripple effect for us with fossil fuels. We can argue until the cows come home about alternative fuels. If there is one place on the planet that solar is going to work someday and be very, very, very efficient, it's going to be in Arizona with the days of sunshine that we get. There's no doubt about it. That the idea that we can turn sunlight into energy, into power, is a great thing. But that doesn't mean we're not going to need fossil fuels. Oil is used for so many different things. When we have a president who said they were going to attack the industry, and they have with their policies, we've watched gas prices go up. So what we've seen in two areas of increase affect everyone. And who do they affect the most? The working class. And that's grocery prices and gas prices. Everybody's got to get to work. Everybody's got to eat. So you see people, we talk about an obesity problem in America. We talk about not having good nutrition in America. Well, healthy food is a lot more expensive than it was before, and the prices keep going up. Who does that affect the most? I'm a single guy. I make a nice living. This stuff is a nuisance to me. And I count my blessings. This isn't bragging. I'm telling you, I'm talking from personal experience and being in a place where when you watch prices go up, it is crippling. I've been the paycheck to paycheck person for a good chunk of my life, where not knowing if I was going to have enough gas on Friday to get to work to get my paycheck. Those are real things for me. I've lived them. I watched my mom raise three kids. A gas increase like this could have crippled my family when I was a little kid. So it's the working class people that are affected dramatically by when a fuel increase. How about a small business that's barely making it? How about a small business that's hanging on by a thread because of COVID-19? They're having employee issues. They can't find employees that they need. They can't get the work done. They've got to pay more money because they can't attract employees. And now they're getting hammered with increasing gas prices that have no end in sight. These are real issues for businesses, real issues for individuals. And the reason why they're happening, a lot of it has to do with policy. We are no longer energy independent in this country. We are with a fuel line thing on the East Coast is an anomaly. But would it be as big a crisis if we were maintaining the energy independence we had before? I'm talking about the prices. Now, the gouging is going to happen, and that's horrible. But when you have policies that tells the oil industry, we are going to put you out of business, basically. You cannot drill, and there has been a ban on drilling in places, ban on fracking in places. We canceled a pipeline. We have told them that we are going to make it more expensive to do business with fossil fuels. And the industry is responding with price upticks. A barrel of oil costs more money. The price continues to climb. And this is going to affect every single American. So, yes, the policies of the presidency, when he says he's going to raise taxes on the ultra wealthy, that only the wealthy in America are going to be taxed, are going to see a tax increase. That all sounds terrific, but it all gets trickling downhill. You're seeing the effect of it right now with overregulation. You're seeing the effect of it with the policy shift of this administration. But you're going to see it even more so when the tax increases come. So I'm going to make my case. We are just climbing out of COVID-19. Businesses are trying to get back on their feet. Employees want more money. And what's funny is the administration says that they're fighting for the working class so that they can make a living wage. Well, to make a living wage, why don't you get out of the way and allow businesses to do what they do and keep more of their own profits? What we did see in the previous administration with the tax cuts, it did happen. And anyone out there that wants to deny it, look at your own paycheck. There were bonuses and pay increases across the board in almost every industry, along with the lowest unemployment we saw in history, or at least in 50 years. We had the lowest employment rate across almost every demographic. And people were making more money, and we didn't see inflation. Why? The government allowed the business owners to keep more of their own profits. We became more competitive internationally. We were more competitive with in worldwide affairs, and manufacturing jobs started coming back. But employees were making more money. They were giving out bonuses to keep employees. All of those things were happening. How are businesses that are going to be facing the same issue of getting employees, how are they going to pay more money when they're going to have a huge tax increase coming their way in the coming months? It seems to me to be counterproductive of what everybody wants. This should be an American issue, not Democrat, Republican. And when you have policies that you say are helping the working class and what they do is hinder the working class, it's time to reassess the policies. That's all. Reassess the policies. Where did all the students go? Arizona schools are not alone. The dropout rate in America and our kids coming back in the fall. We'll talk about it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Coming up just after 11 o'clock, we are going to talk about the audit once again. Secretary of State in Arizona, Katie Hobbs, has tweeted out, yesterday, observers from my office discovered a Wi-Fi router connected to the audit servers. Ruh-roh. I'm trying to find out. I've got a message into Ken Bennett, who is overseeing the audit, to find out if that's true and if they have any comment if that's true. And we'll explain why that is such a big deal of why it's being connected to the internet and voting machine, audit machines and servers. We're going to talk about all this coming up just after 11 o'clock. Let's start with U.S. There's the headline. U.S. schools fight to keep students amid fear of dropout surge. From Kansas City, it starts there. U.S. educators doing everything they can to track down high school students who stop showing up to classes and to help them get the credits needed to graduate. There isn't data available yet of how the pandemic has affected the nation's overall dropout rate. 2019 is the last year for which it's available. So the story talks about retaining students. Teachers have a miserable job, in my opinion. Anyway, I couldn't be a teacher. Now, I love being a coach, but there's a difference between coaching kids in sports. You can influence their lives doing that. Life lessons and everything else. It's terrific. But it's also doing something they love to do. As a matter of fact, many times sports are used as a tool to get kids to complete their education. That when you say to a student, you have to have a certain grade point average to play on this team, they will get better in school to do something like this that they love. So I, as many years as I coached kids, I would never compare myself to an educator because teachers have a thankless job. There's no doubt about that. And it got even harder to do during COVID-19. No doubt about that either. But the fight to get schools open again was a ridiculous fight that didn't need to happen, and it didn't need to go on as long as it did. And we are losing students because students are lazy to begin with. You know, listen, I was a lazy teenager. We go through this phase. Now, there are some students and there are some parents that are blessed. You've got a student that's an excellent student that loves school, that wants to go on to bigger and better things and loves education. But we also know that the majority of kids love to skip school. You know, who didn't? And I, parents, I don't want to out you. I don't want to get you in trouble because next thing you know, your kids will be asking you, did you ever skip school? And now you're required to answer that question. You know, there was something about not being there, skipping school, trying to get out. I was a terrible high school student. Terrible. I joke when I say it, but I'm not joking. I owe my teachers apologies. I wasn't a bad kid in the sense of a criminal. I was just the class clown. I didn't take much seriously, including myself or my future at that age. But when you have kids no longer engaged in a classroom setting and they have to log in online, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. And that's what's happened here. This is a byproduct of the pandemic. We need to get kids back in school. We should have had kids back in the classroom much sooner than we did. And this fight we had politically was the ones that are paying the price now are going to be this generation of student. we are going to see people miss the mark. You watch how many kids come out 5 years from now, 6 years from now, 7 years from now that are not equipped. Because back when they were in second and third grade, they weren't learning properly. They weren't learning to read. They weren't learning to be critical thinkers. They weren't learning to regurgitate what they had learned and say, listen, I've read this book or I've read this essay, and now here's my book report. Here's my essay report. Those basic skills that all of us have to excel when we get older. So we may not see the results immediately, but there's going to be a backlash when you see these dropouts now. But what do you think school is going to be like for the next few years? Trying to rehabilitate these kids, give them remedial reading, remedial training. And if you pretend like this isn't an issue, it's because either you're involved and it's going to impact you negatively, or you want to turn a blind eye and pretend it's not happening. It's happening. Kids are intelligent. They're just not being taught. And the teachers have a difficult job. I thought online learning was a very difficult way to do things. It was horrible. But we needed to get back into the classroom sooner. And we needed to get in absolutely as soon as possible. All the protocols, whatever else it was, kids needed to be back in school. How many of these kids are going to be lost? What's it going to take to get some of these kids back? The time, the expense. And it's time to start waking up to some of these issues, because we are now seeing the residual effects of what happened with COVID-19. And not all of it is good news. And we'll see what the school year is like moving forward. We talked earlier about the election audit where the Secretary of State wanted to know and is demanding a security plan, which is something we had planned to talk about. But also, she has just tweeted out, our Secretary of State has tweeted out, that they found a Wi-Fi router attached to the servers at the audit. What's the truth to that? We have calls into her office. We have calls also into Ken Bennett, who is overseeing the audit. We're going to talk about this, the implications of this, coming up in just a moment.